You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
One more day left in the Major League Baseball All-Star break. Season resumes tomorrow with the Yankees and the Red Sox. Mets will pick things back up in Pittsburgh, the same team that they split four games with at Citi Field before heading into the break. And joining me right now is the outstanding Mets beat writer for MLB.com. He is my buddy Anthony DeComo, who's nice enough to give me a couple of minutes on the line here. Anthony, hope your All-Star break is going well. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you, Dan?
No complaints whatsoever. I hope you're getting a couple of days here to relax, and then it's on to Pittsburgh for the Metropolitans. Let's rewind before we look ahead here. In summarizing the first half of the season for this baseball team, what grade would you give them as a whole?
I'd say I'd give them a solid B, Dan. Certainly did not go the way that they wanted, but I think the first half being over the All-Star break gives us a chance to take a look back and maybe look at the fact that they've managed to stay in first place for, I think it's 9 consecutive weeks now, with maybe some of the respect that it deserves. And what I mean by that is it felt to me for so much of this first half where if you even mentioned the fact that the Mets were in first place, you got met with scorn, with ridicule. Like, yeah, they're in first place, but this, and this went wrong. This, and this has to happen. There's truth to that. No doubt about it. The Mets had a lot of things go wrong in the first half. A lot of the reason why they've been in first place is because other teams in the division had things go wrong too. But unlike some of those other teams in the division, the Braves come to mind as a team that might be beyond repair at this point. The Mets aren't beyond repair. The lineup is healthy, and while it hasn't produced as they would have hoped since it's been healthy the past couple of weeks, there's reason to believe with the track records of these guys that that can and will change. The rotation has managed to patch it together, and there is definitely reason to believe that the Mets will make a move to upgrade that as well as the bullpen before the deadline. So you put all that together, I think there is plenty of reason to believe that this team is going to be better in the second half than it was in the first half. And I'm not telling you they're going to win the division, but given the fact that they have a lead, given the fact that they have all the things going for them that other teams in the division don't have going for them, I think they are the one team that has potential to maybe go away and win running away with this thing versus it's very hard for me to see a team like the Braves separating themselves, a team like the Nationals, certainly the Phillies separating themselves. Those teams could make a surprise and win the division, but I don't think they have the capability of winning the division like by 8-9 games. I think the Mets do.
And Anthony, I agree with you too, because you know what? Whether you believe in this team or whether you don't, and look, all things considered, they've done a nice job, but then you can also say, yeah, but they should have a little bit more separation considering the rest of this division is, as you put it, and you know, it's well documented, as mediocre as it is. Throwing Atlanta now with the Acuna injury. I don't think that there's any coming back from that. Schwarber's down for the count for Washington. He was the hottest hitter on the planet. And, you know, Philadelphia, you can't trust that bullpen whatsoever. So those teams so have their issues. And it might not even be a case, Anthony, of having confidence in the Mets necessarily. It's more about the fact that you don't have any confidence in those other teams in the division for them to even take first place from the Mets, which is maybe the more likely reason the Mets will end up winning the National League East. Is that fair?
100%, Dan, 100%. And when you say it out loud like that, people act like it's a criticism of them or a condemnation of the Mets. This team's not going to be a 100-win team. Therefore, they have issues that are irresolvable. And that's not really true because the whole point of this is you want to make the playoffs. Once you make the playoffs, you have Jacob deGrom, you have potentially Carlos Carrasco and Taijuan Walker, Marcus Stroman. You have Noah Syndergaard should be healthy by then. You have all these different things. I mean, maybe we'll see Kumar Rocker if the Mets make the playoffs. I think it's a long shot, but you never know. It's very, very exciting, this roster that you have, if you're able to make it. And you don't have to make it by winning 105 games. You can maybe win this division by winning 90, and then all of a sudden everybody starts 0-0 in October, and I will take the Mets roster in a fair fight against the Dodgers or the Padres or whoever else you want to put up there. So can they backdoor their way in? Yes. Is there fault in that? No. It's kind of what they did in 2015, and all of a sudden they caught some lightning in a bottle in October and looked so much better than they did throughout that season. I think people gloss over the history there, and if you remember with that 2015 team, Dan, from April through really mid-July, it was not a team that looked very good at all. And it certainly was not a championship caliber team, the type that you would say this team has World Series aspirations. This team, the 2021 Mets, are more talented at this point than the 2015 Mets were at this time 6 years ago by a long shot. So it's not a stretch for me to think if they can just survive and hold on and take advantage of these other NL East teams, then all of a sudden you get to October and they can make some noise.
You mean we're not yearning for the days of John Mayberry Jr. and Eric Campbell in the middle of the batting order, Anthony? We're not going back that far?
Exactly. Yeah.
No, it's a good point, but, you know, the one thing you have to caution against, and I think this, you know, goes without saying here, National League East is going to be a one-team playoff participant this year. You're not getting a wild card from this division, so you better not allow yourself any sort of a slip-up. That's why it's incumbent upon them to win the division, because I don't think you have that safety net this year of the wild card, given how well the three teams are in the NL West, which, you know, they might end up getting all three teams. Now the Reds are making a charge in the Central, so who knows? You got to win that NL East. Let me ask you this. The starting pitching clearly has carried the way for this group with the three guys up top in DeGrom and Stroman and Taijuan Walker. It's nice to see Carlos Carrasco on the rehab trail. He's in Brooklyn. We might see him before the end of the month. That's great. But can't count on somebody who hasn't thrown a pitch this year. Same thing even with Noah Syndergaard. You know, we don't know when or if we're going to see him in any capacity. And those three guys who have been so good for them, Anthony, you just wonder, maybe not DeGrom because he's DeGrom, but the other two who, you know, we're not used to seeing them from start to finish deliver, you know, first-rate type of seasons from April all the way to October. And I just worry, can this rotation exist, even holding out hope for Carrasco and Syndergaard, or do you think Zach Scott in the front office, they would be best served going out and bringing in another starting pitcher?
I think absolutely, Dan. They need another starting pitcher. Best case scenario, and you get this version of Stroman and Walker and DeGrom stays healthy and all that happens for you in the second half of the season. Even with that, right now you've got a very untested rookie in Tyler McGill who's in the rotation.
He's been very good.
And, you know, he's been great for them, Dan. But are you going to count on that as your rock-solid number five for the rest of the year? I think it would behoove the Mets to go out and get a piece. And at the very least, then all of a sudden you have a depth piece in McGill. You can come in, you can use him in relief, you can bring him up to start a game if you need, and say that's your number six as opposed to a guy you're counting on every single fifth day who's probably, frankly, given where he's at in his development, not quite the pitcher that he will be in the prime of his career. That's no disrespect to him. It's just the fact that he hasn't had all that many starts above A-ball in his life. So that's kind of where I feel like the Mets are at with the rotation. And then the worst case scenario, you have an injury or you have a step back from Stroman or Walker. All of a sudden, you get a legitimate bona fide major league starter. And that's what I think the Mets should go after. Not these depth pieces, but one of these guys who you can plug in the rotation, a Kyle Gibson, a Herman Marquez, Sean Means, whoever you want to put in there. There's a laundry list of probably about 12 names that will cost significant prospect capital, but I think it's worthwhile. And I think it's worthwhile for another reason as well. Dan, looking forward, looking into 2022, which is what happens a lot with some of these deadline deals these days, a lot of these starting pitchers who are available are not rentals. They're guys who are under control for another year, in some cases another 3 years. And when we go into this offseason, you don't know what's going to happen with Stroman, who will be a free agent. You don't know what's going to happen with Noah Syndergaard. Maybe he accepts a qualifying offer, but maybe he doesn't. And while you have a nice core to your rotation for next season with DeGrom, Carrasco, and Taijuan Walker, there are question marks there. And you could do yourself a lot of favors in terms of leverage and negotiation if you get another rock-solid starter in there before we hit the hot stove and free agent season where these guys can negotiate with every single team.
Anthony DeComo, MLB.com, joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. He is the author of the David Wright memoir called The Captain. It's out now in paperback. You could get that at your favorite bookseller. When you look at this lineup, I know that, you know, the guys in that locker room and Luis Rojas and the organization, they're going to tell you that the answers are within this clubhouse. You know, they believe in the guys they have. And look, the guys they have that are underperforming have generally performed in their careers. Talking about Conforto, McNeil, of course, Francisco Lindor. Do you think that there is a great sense of urgency to go out and add another bat to this lineup? Or is it just going to be incumbent upon those guys, Anthony, actually performing to the level that we expect them to?
Yeah, I think they're married to these guys one way or the other, Dan. And I understand that, yes, it's possible in theory that you could go out and get a Chris Bryant, which I remain skeptical to this day that he's even available, at least at a price that, that makes him realistically available. Could you go out and upgrade third base? Yeah, you could. You would probably need to part with most of what's of any value right now in your farm system to do it. It probably handicaps you in your pursuit of a real bona fide starting pitcher like I was just talking about. So for me, I wouldn't do it. I think you've got two very good baseball players in J.D. Davis and Jonathan Villar who complement each other well with their skill sets, who can hold down third base for you. And then you rely on Michael Conforto and Jeff McNeil and Brandon Nimmo and all these guys who have either been hurt or underperformed, Lindor, McCann, go out right on down the line, 1 through 8. You rely on these guys to be better because, frankly, if they're not, then you're not really going anywhere anyway. This is a good lineup on paper. This is the lineup that the Mets built over the offseason to be not just good, but one of the best in the National League. They haven't been that. If that remains the case, 1 through 8 in the second half, it doesn't matter if you add Chris Bryant. You're probably not going to do it. So you need those guys to be better one way or the other.
Should we be troubled at all with this kind of, I don't want to call it a malaise, but, you know, we're talking about a first-place team. We're talking about a club with postseason aspirations and all these things. But they've just become kind of mediocre of late, Anthony, right? I mean, it's 10-10 in their last 20, 15-15 in their last 30. How do they break out of that and actually establish a little bit of a winning pattern? And I mean, that series to close out the break, in my opinion, couldn't have gone any worse, considering you drop four, you know, you split four games with the Pirates, you blow a 5-0 lead on a day where everybody, you know, on both sides has 1 foot out the door already thinking about the plane trip they're going to be on at night to go away for a few days here. And to blow that game, it's just, you know, when is this team going to start flexing their muscles to look like a first place club?
Yeah, it was a troubling series, Dan, for all the reasons you just mentioned. That's a bad team, the Pirates. And, you know, while it's baseball and anything can happen in any given game, I think what people maybe don't understand all the time is that, you know, so many winning teams, so many playoff teams, so many teams that go on to win the World Series. And I drew a parallel to the 2015 Mets earlier. They were like this, too. They kind of just hold their own against other good teams. And they beat up on the bad teams, and then once they get to October, they get hot and they get on a run because somebody's got to win those games. That's what the Mets need to do this year. They don't need to go, you know, 8-1 against the Dodgers, and they don't need to just beat up on the Braves every time they see them. They need to beat up on the Marlins and the Rockies and, yes, the Pittsburgh Pirates. And they had 7 games against the Pirates on either side of the All-Star break, and you were really hoping as a Mets fan that they win 5 or 6 of those. Well, they've already lost. Two of them. So it's something that they have failed to do so far. It's something that they need to do in the second half. It's not too late. You ask me what they need to do to get on that run. I really don't know, Dan, because the answers are obvious in that they need to pitch. They need to hit. They need to do all the things that make up a winning baseball team, and they haven't been able to get it done. So how do you create that spark? I'm not sure. I do know that they have the talent to do it. They have the talent, as I said earlier, to get on a roll and really put some distance between themselves and the rest of the division in a way that I don't think any other NL East team can do. So whatever that formula is, they need to find it.
He's been better, but we saw a hiccup again, even though he was asked to maybe go a little bit longer than we're accustomed to seeing him. And we're talking about Diaz, of course, on Sunday when he was asked to get the final 5 outs. Do you deep down in a big situation, 3 outs to go, do you trust him when you hear those trumpets blaring out there at Citi Field and when he steps on the mound that this is going to be game, set, match? Or are you still a little bit leery given the hiccups over the last couple of years?
Yeah, what's your definition of trust, Dan? Honestly, yeah. Because do I trust him like I would trust Mariano Rivera? No, well, of course not. How could you after what's gone on? Do I trust him to close out games, close out big games, close out playoff games? I think the Mets are going to have to do that.
Anthony, let me ask you this. Do you trust him more than Seth? Do you trust him more than Seth Lugo?
I trust Seth Lugo more. I think he's the best pitcher in their bullpen, but they're going to need both of those guys to get the job done. And frankly, they're going to need both of them to get the job done in really big situations in the ninth. And if you put Lugo in that job where he's the closer, I think he loses a lot of value because he is so valuable to you as that flexible guy who can come in and face the best part of the order, can go multiple innings, can do all these things. I don't love the rigidness of having him in the ninth. And once again, it's one of those things where Diaz is going to pitch those innings. And if he's not good in them, you almost don't have a choice. You need him to be good or you're probably not going to get to where you want to go.
Very, very fair point. That's well put, and I think that I agree with you that if the Mets are going to be a special team this year, Diaz has to be a big part of it, so I would agree with you there. Final thing, does DeGrom eclipse Bob Gibson's 1968 ERA record?
No, but I think it'll come closer than any of us really thought possible in this modern era. I mean, just the fact that he's right there, I think it's 1.06 for Gibson and 1.08 for DeGrom in the first half of the season. If you'd asked me a few years ago, I would have probably scoffed at you that it's even possible. So maybe he surprises us. I just think it was, one of those records that, I mean, you're talking about a year in 1968 where they literally changed the rules of the game because Gibson was too good. DeGrom is somehow approaching that level of dominance. I think ultimately he'll fall a little bit short of it.
It will be fun to watch here, certainly, and Mets fans just want to see him win games and pitch big games for this team and hopefully help him secure a National League East Division title. Anthony, thank you for a couple of minutes, my friend. Appreciate the time, as always, and good luck getting back out there on the road here for the second half of the season. Thanks again.
Always happy to join you, Dan. Take care.
All right, be good. There's Anthony DeComo of MLB.com, and don't forget, you can check out his book if you're a Met fan or a baseball fan, The Captain, the David Wright memoir, on sale wherever books are sold. Good piece of reading there, certainly, if you're a fan of David Wright or just baseball in general.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.